Hi, this is Sean Astin. I hope you enjoy this clip from my new book and audio. I felt inspired when I walked into the studio. It was like another rite of passage. My father had been through this. So had countless other actors. It was a process bathed in trust. You had to put your faith in somebody else completely. To that end, I was offered a tour of the facility, designed to set my mind at ease by making the work less mystical and frightening. They showed me masks and molds that had been designed for other actors. And then it was my turn. Inspiration turned to fear. "You ready?" Howard asked. My mouth was dry, so I just nodded. "Okay, have a seat." I tried to project confidence, but inside I was dying. As they stirred the mixture that was to be applied to my face, I asked a question. "What happens if I have trouble breathing after it hardens? Do you do a little tracheotomy or something?" Howard laughed. "Don't worry, you'll be fine." They kept talking, making jokes, trying to put me at ease. Really, though, I wasn't in the mood for conversation. I tried to be cordial, but what I wanted to do was just close my eyes and get through it. "Some people tell me it's quite a soothing experience," Howard said, scooping a handful of glop from a bucket. Splat. He smeared a patch over my cheeks and forehead. I tensed. "Just breathe. That's it. Nice and easy." Then a funny thing happened. The nervousness went away. The more of my face they covered, the more soothing it became, and I realized then that I'd lived through it. There was a moment when they were working close to my nose, and I was concerned that my nostrils would get plugged with plaster and I'd choke to death, but that passed quickly. The truth is, they were extraordinarily good at their jobs, and I trusted them. Eventually, as they covered my ears and eyes, everything went dark, and a weird feeling of sensory deprivation took over. 3 minutes passed. 4 minutes. 5. "We're waiting for it to harden," Howard explained. "Sit tight, it's almost over." Someone tapped the shell, and it occurred to me then that I had no idea how they were going to remove the mold. When I heard Howard say, "It's ready," I felt another small surge of panic. I held my breath. Someone reached under my chin and tugged gently on the mold, and I felt my skin pull away from it. The thing had enough elasticity that it could be removed like a ski mask. Just like that, I was in the open air again, breathing freely. Howard held up the mask and explained how they would use it to create an image of my face and then make innumerable latex molds from that image. "You did great," he said. "Thanks," I replied, feigning nonchalance. The molds for the hobbit feet, those giant furry slippers that would be individually applied in a tedious process each morning in New Zealand, were done later, and that was a ball. There's nothing panic-inducing about having your feet molded. I arrived with my family in New Zealand on the last day of August 1999, and along with the other actors portraying members of the Fellowship, immediately began an intensive training period. With war movies, it's not unusual for actors to be subjected to a 10-day boot camp. Our boot camp for The Lord of the Rings consisted of 6 weeks of training, from dialect coaching to fight training. We had the opportunity of working closely with Bob Anderson, one of the great sword masters of Hollywood. Then there was canoe training, weight training, and organized bonding sessions with the cast. From the second I got off the plane, I knew making this movie was going to be unlike anything I had ever experienced. Usually, if you travel halfway around the world to film on location, you're given time to adjust, to get comfortable. There's a welcome basket and a meeting, maybe a massage or a nap. You talk about stuff and just sort of sit around for a while. You get the movie star treatment. Not on The Lord of the Rings. Basically, we got off the plane in Wellington and were whisked away to an industrial part of town. You would think that with a $270 million trilogy, filming would take place on something that at least looked like a Hollywood soundstage. Uh-uh. There were no wrought iron gates, no Warner Brothers water tower, no Hollywood sign, nothing. New Zealand is a breathtakingly beautiful place, But Wellington is a city, and like any city, it has its industrial side. And that, mixed with a nearby quaint neighborhood, is where we set up shop, specifically in an old, abandoned paint factory. Peter was there on the day we arrived, and the atmosphere was a little reminiscent of Willy Wonka. There was all this ambient energy and nervousness about the arrival of Peter. Peter's going to be here now, and his schedule is very tight, so don't expect too much. When he came in, bounding around the corner in bare feet and mangy hair and a rumpled T-shirt, looking like a mad scientist who sort of giggles his way through life, I couldn't help but be amused and impressed. We shook hands or hugged, and he gave us a quick tour. Peter was the proud papa of an extraordinary display of creativity, and every second I was with him, whether I wanted to or not, I found myself studying him. Not just the way he handled the technical aspects of directing a $270 million production, but how he interacted with people. What it was about his personality that prompted people to be drawn to him. What it was in his decision-making process that made him so much smarter than I was. I was in awe, and had to admit to myself that I was at least momentarily out of my depth. Then and there, I resolved to learn everything I possibly could about every aspect of this phenomenal enterprise.